You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Good Tuesday afternoon. Welcome into Packers Total Access. I'm your host, Clayton Bailey. You can check us out on Packernet.com. You can find me on Twitter at Packers_Access. If you have a question or a comment for the show, you can email us. That email address is PackersTotalAccess@gmail.com. And today, guys, we are going to have kind of a short episode, but I'm really excited about this. We're going to call this and dub it the GM episode. And what we're going to cover in this episode is for our history segment, we're going to do a little ditty outlining one of the greatest general managers in the history of the National Football League. And that's our very own Green Bay Packers general manager, Ron Wolf. Okay, we're going to kind of talk about his career and give you maybe patch together some historical facts that you might not have otherwise known about Ron Wolf and before he got to Green Bay. You know, as a Packer fan, sometimes, you kind of think the story begins and ends with just the Packers. And you'll find out that most of these players slash general managers, anybody that we're outlining as far as their career, in most cases, man, they spent a lot of time to get to the point where they came on board with the Packers. And I think it's very important to kind of talk about the hard work that goes into that. So we're going to talk about Ron Wolf, and then we're going to talk Brian Gutekunst. We're going to talk about the success that he's had. We're going to kind of compare that to Ron Wolf, obviously a much smaller sample size as far as, you know, time in the league and being in charge as general manager is Brian Gutekunst. And we're also going to kind of outline some of his draft classes so you have an idea of just how much success he's had drafting players since taking over as general manager. We're not going to dive too much into the free agents that Brian Gutekunst signed, which we all know, you know, he was responsible for signing Adrian Amos, Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, that really completely revamped that Packers defense. You know, before Brian Gutekunst took over as general manager, it seems like it was forever ago, but guys, it was not too long ago that this team could not put a defense together. I mean, we had that one solid year that ended up going on a Super Bowl run with Aaron Rodgers at the helm and a pretty solid defense. But ever since Brian Gutekunst took over, it's become more and more apparent that he is really, really focused on building a strong, stout defense. And I think that it holds true, man. Defense wins championships. It really does. So before we get into the history segment and outline of Mr. Ron Wolf, I do want to throw out a quick plug for our giveaway. First of all, you guys are awesome. Okay, the donations have been lit up for the GoFundMe, you know, that we have attached to this sweepstakes here. The tweet is getting retweeted out like crazy. It's really cool to see people participating in this giveaway. So let me outline again the details to that giveaway. Okay, so like I said before, we're going to be attending a Monday Night Football game, December 19th, against the defending Super Bowl champion LA Rams. Aaron Donald, Matt Stafford, the whole crew coming to town. Cooper Kupp, one of the best receivers in the league, is going to lock horns with our Green Bay Packers in this awesome defense. Going up against Aaron Rodgers, and I mean, you know the roster. You're huge Packer fans. You don't need me to go through that. But we're giving away one ticket to that game, and it's not just any ticket, guys. This is a ticket that's valued at $450, and it's going to be in the indoor club seats. It'll be a seat with us. A couple of the Packernet podcast crew members, we're going to be there hanging out, eating good food, watching the ball game. It'll give you a chance to kind of hang out with us. And it's going to be in the indoor club seats out of the elements. Hopefully there's going to be some snow flying, right? And for the Seattle game that I was at last year, that was the case. It was so cold outside. The snow was flying. The crowd was rowdy. But we were indoors watching the game with flat screen TV access. You could see the Jumbotron perfectly there at Lambeau Field. And on top of that, you know, being in a climate-controlled setting, it's just a really, really cool crew up there. So we're going to be giving that ticket away. And here's what you've got to do to enter that sweepstakes, okay? First of all, if you'll go to my Twitter account, at Packers_access, you'll see that the pinned tweet I have is the one that you need to retweet, okay? And basically, just go in, make sure you're following our account. That's going to be very important. If you're not following the account, you don't enter the sweepstakes when we draw on August 5th, okay? And also, you've got to retweet that. So that's going to be a great way for us to keep up with who has entered themselves into the contest. So go to my Twitter account, the pinned tweet at the top, retweet that, make sure you're following the account. And also, if that'll get you entered one time into the sweepstakes. Now, here's what's cool. If you want to add additional entries, you are allowed to do that. And here's how we're going about doing that. In that same tweet, you'll see a GoFundMe attached to it. Okay, that's for a gentleman by the name of Drew. He's got a GoFundMe set up for him to get a seizure service dog. Okay, really, really excited for him to hit his goal. We're closing in on that. So I don't know how long that aspect of the sweepstakes will be available. So you don't want to waste time. You want to go donate. Now, for every $5 that you donate to that GoFundMe, that'll enter you in an additional time into the drawing, okay, to win that ticket. So if, you know, for example, if you donated $50, then that's going to get you 10 additional entries into the sweepstakes, okay? And here's the thing. It's not just about winning the ticket, although I know everybody wants to win it. I completely understand. But it's going to a good cause as well, right? And that's what we want to do on this show, guys. We want to, While other podcasts, I don't mean to be negative, but I'm just going to be honest here. While other podcasts are creating political division, and it just seems like every night you log onto Twitter, and I'm literally like the Simpsons grandpa gif, right? Where he walks in, sets his hat down, turns a circle, grabs his hat, and walks right back out the door. That's me on Twitter almost every night, because there's always some kind of argument over politics, former presidents, current presidents, you know, everybody trying to grandstand and pretend like they're better than other people and they care more about a cause than another. What we're wanting to do on this show is spread positive change. And I'm sorry, man. Being on Twitter and being a loudmouth does no one any good. And the one thing that irks me to death are these people that go on Twitter and pretend like they're saving the world, they're changing the world by simply getting on there and running their mouth. And then what I want to do is just shout to the top of my lungs, what have you done to help somebody? What did you do yesterday that made someone else's life better? Because I'm sorry, if you fooled yourself into thinking that grandstanding on Twitter is out changing the world, you're sadly mistaken. I mean, we can agree to disagree, and you have the right to be wrong. That's totally cool. But what we're wanting to do on this show is spread positive change and actually reach out and help people, right? And this is one of those causes that Ryan made me aware of. And I just think it's great that you can enter yourself into that contest and take a chance of winning the ticket, yeah, but also helping another human being. I just think it's win-win for everybody. So, again, if you just go to Twitter, I don't mean to rant, but, man, that stuff just bothers me. I can't stay. Talk is cheap. And I really, really can't stand it when people just talk about how the world should be and how other people need to fix their mistakes and change who they are. And they need to, I want to use bad language. It's chicken, you know what. Get up, you know, I'm a Christian, right? And that doesn't make me better than anybody who isn't a Christian. As a matter of fact, in my opinion, it makes me worse. It just means that I need a little more grace from everybody else because I make mistakes on a daily basis. But when people get out there and pretend like they're all high and mighty and they actually care about people and they never really roll up their sleeves and do anything, you know, I've got a quote. I say it all the time. I hashtag it sometimes. No fake Christians. When we're feeding, you know, the elderly here in the community or the homeless or whatever, I always hashtag that. And I love the fact that it upsets the church. Because somebody's got to rattle their cages. There was only one man that rattled the cages of the church a long, long time ago, and they hung him on a cross. And I think every now and again, everybody needs to be shook up a little bit and say, hey, look, stop running your mouth, roll up your sleeves, get down in the slums with people, get a little bit dirty, and actually make a difference in the world. Either that or shut your mouth. So that's kind of how I feel about that. I apologize if that's too strong, but that's just who I am. Now, back to the giveaway. Again, just go to that tweet. All the instructions are right there, and we look forward to having you enter that that drawing and like I said, helping Drew get that seizure service on. Here's what's really cool. Once we hit that goal, we're moving on to something else. And that's what I love about this PackerNet podcast. There's always some kind of giving. You know, there was an incident. I actually didn't donate to this one personally, but Orion promoted it because I was kind of focused on helping Drew. And that's totally cool. You know, you can pick whichever one, you know, hits your heart, right? But, you know, it was, I think it was a family that was devastated, a young family that was devastated by an automobile accident. If it hadn't been for Ryan, there'd have been a lot of people that wouldn't even known about that. You know, there was a fellow podcaster that, you know, just, unfortunately lost his life unexpectedly, right? And Ryan helped promote that. They hit that goal real quick, right? I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I know the guy because I didn't. But it was just so awesome to see the community band together to help other people. That's what we represent on this network. And that's what we're going to continue to represent as we move forward. So anyway, with that being said, that's how you enter the sweepstakes. I actually just answered an email, and it was really, really cool. Guy was asking, hey, look, I'm not on Twitter, but I'd like to enter the sweepstakes. What do I do? So I sent him the link in the email. That's an option, too. So if you're hearing my voice and you're not on Twitter, I don't blame you. It can be very toxic. That was the point of my five-minute rant just now, and I apologize for it. But if you'll just send me an email there, I'll get you instructions on how to enter the contest, and you can enter it there as well. But as far as not donating anything and entering the contest, it just takes a retweet and a follow there on Twitter. So with that being said, let's talk about Ron Wolf. And Ron Wolf, man, let me tell you, this is a guy that has dedicated his entire life to football. Right, and as you guys know, Elliot Wolf actually worked for the Packers too. That's Ron's son. I believe he spent some time in Cleveland. I'm not sure exactly where he's at now. I think the last I heard, he might have been in New England as an assistant to Bill Belichick. But Ron Wolf was born on December 30th, 1938. He's a former American football general manager of the National Football League's Green Bay Packers. Wolf is widely credited with bringing success to the Packers franchise that had rarely won during the two decades prior to Wolf joining the organization. He also played a significant role in personnel operations with Oakland and the Los Angeles Raiders from 1963 to 1975, and again from 1978 to 1990. He joined Green Bay's front office in November of 1991 from a personnel director's job with the New York Jets. He was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in August of 2015. So, early life, he was born in New Freedom, Pennsylvania. I think it's so cool that just how many football minds are born in the state of Pennsylvania. It truly is a football state. To me, it's kind of 1A and 1B when you think of Texas and you think of Pennsylvania. It just seems like those are the two states that really, really love football, and it's kind of bred into them at a very early age. But he was born on December 30th, 1938, after serving 3 years in the Army. So once again, thank you, Mr. Wolf, for your service. It's amazing how many people are a part of the Packers history, the Packers lore, that actually served our country. But I had, until this point right here, I had no idea that Ron Wolf served in the Army for 3 years. That's awesome. Wolf played college baseball at Maryville College in Tennessee. I did not know that. This is amazing. That's actually about an hour and 15 minutes from where I'm speaking right now, where I live. That's awesome. After college, he worked for Pro Football Illustrated, Chicago sports newspaper. So in Oakland and with the Los Angeles Raiders, right? Wolf became a scout for the Raiders in 1963. With the Raiders, Wolf took part in drafting such notable players as Art Shell, Gene Upshaw, Ken Stabler, and Jack Tatum, all of whom would play for the Super Bowl, I believe that's the Super Bowl XI championship team in 1976, and later such players as Howie Long, Marcus Allen, and Matt Millen, all of the Super Bowl, I can't read those Roman numerals, I apologize. I'm from Kentucky, and we barely could count using our fingers, so I'm not going to try to figure that out. So anyway, that championship team in 1983, the then Los Angeles Raiders. After the death of Raiders owner Al Davis, Wolf was rumored to possibly come back to Oakland. He didn't specify that he wanted to have a full-time job as general manager there, but he told the new ownership team that he would assist them with anything they needed. In an interview with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, he supported Green Bay Packers director of football operations, Reggie McKenzie, as a perfect candidate for the GM position in Oakland, and called him, quote, a tremendous evaluator when it comes to finding players. So as far as the Raiders' history, I think it's safe to say that the criteria of greatness that John Madden always talked about, you know, he said the criteria of greatness is, can you tell the history of something without speaking of this person's name? And you cannot tell the history of the Oakland Raiders without speaking Ron Wolf's name. I mean, he basically was the architect, or one of the architects, for putting together those championship runs for the Raiders there in the 60s and 70s. That is really, really cool. I'm sorry, the 70s and 80s. He started that, building that foundation in 1963. But, I mean, you're talking about Art Shell, Gene Upshaw, Ken Stabler, Jack Tatum. Those are four Hall of Famers. Howie Long, Marcus Allen, and Matt Millen. That's wild. That's really, really good stuff. And obviously, he had a strong connection to Al Davis. I think it's also cool that he put in that word, you know, that vote of confidence for Reggie McKenzie to be hired. If you guys don't know, Reggie McKenzie is a black man, and so there you see that the tradition of Ron Wolf. Al Davis. As much as people like to talk bad about Al Davis was very, very much so involved in providing equal rights to minorities and helping get their foot in the door as far as in the game. You know, Art Shell becoming, I believe, a head coach, if I remember correctly. That was a hire that Al Davis did. There was also another guy. I want to say his name is Flores, I believe. There was a head coach that won a Super Bowl with the Raiders, and he was actually the very first, if I remember correctly, the very first minority head coach in the history of the National Football League. Al Davis hired him. You know, it kind of goes unnoticed because obviously Flores was not an African American, but he was a minority, and it was, you know, in my opinion, just as important to kind of help get his foot in the door and kind of tear down those barriers that you know plagued our country for so long, and some would say still does today. I'm not here to debate or argue that. It's something I don't have to deal with on a daily basis, obviously, so it's not fair for me to even comment on it. But moving on to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, so he wasn't done there. Ron Wolf went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 1975. He joined the expansion Tampa Bay Buccaneers as vice president of operations. He helped build the team that would advance to the 1979 NFC Championship game. He would not be around to see his team develop, however, as he resigned his position with the Buccaneers in February of 1978, citing, quote, personal matters. It's believed that he had difficulty working with Buccaneer owner Hugh Culverhouse, and that Culverhouse was trying to interfere with personnel decisions. Wolf later indicated that Culverhouse's close personal relationship with and strong financial stake in coach John McKay meant that Wolf had to be the one to pay with his job for the team's 0-26 start. Wolf returned to the Raiders on the expiration of his Buccaneer contract. So it obviously didn't work out there. There's actually a documentary that you can find online. I believe you can find it on YouTube. I know you can find it on NFL.com or a part of Game Pass, where they talk about that 0-26 start that the Buccaneers had. And you could see that, in my opinion, it was all John McKay's fault. He was a horrible leader at head coach. He was a guy who had success in college. We've seen it time and time again with so many college coaches thinking they could step in. You've seen it here most recently with Urban Meyer, right? An absolute disaster. You've seen it with the great Nick Saban, arguably the greatest college football coach in the history of college football. I'm not getting emotional. My voice is cracking. But he came up and couldn't make it happen. You had Steve Spurrier, who won a national title as a college coach. He stepped in the league, couldn't make it happen. And Ron Wolf stepped down because he felt like he was going to be the fall guy for a guy who just didn't know how to coach, and the owner was completely committed to John McKay. How someone could start 0-26 and you still be committed to him is beyond me. But let's move on to the good part, right? In 1991, Wolf was hired to replace Packers general manager Tom Brotts. Wolf's first major decisions were to fire head coach Lindy Infante, hire then San Francisco 49ers offensive coordinator Mike Holmgren to replace him, and to trade for then Atlanta Falcons backup quarterback Brett Favre. Think about everything that Ron Wolf did in the very first early stages of taking over for the Packers. He fired the head coach, right? He said, all right, the hot team in the league is the San Francisco 49ers. I want their offense, their West Coast offense, which it's kind of funny, guys. The West Coast offense was actually created in Cincinnati. It was just kind of made famous on the West Coast when Walsh took over as the San Francisco 49ers head coach. Here's a quick little history segment for you, just a brief nugget. The reason the West Coast offense was even created by Bill Walsh was because his starting quarterback in Cincinnati got hurt, and the backup quarterback had a weak arm. He was an accurate passer. He was a smart quarterback. I can't remember his name, but Bill Walsh said, you know what, let's like every great coach does, he assesses his team and builds the game plan around their strengths, right? You know, Bill Belichick says it best. He says, players win them and coaches lose them. And I think there's so much truth to that. And what he did was he molded this West Coast offense, a short passing game, around the fact that his quarterback had a weak arm. So he took advantage of the accuracy and him being able to read the defense and have this short passing attack. Lo and behold, the West Coast offense was born right there in Cincinnati. So with that being said, got a little off track, but oh yeah, the other thing. So he goes out and hires Mike Holmgren, right, as his head coach. And then he says, you know what, this drunk, fat, out of shape, redneck quarterback from Mississippi who's sitting on the bench down there in Atlanta for a horrible team that couldn't crack the lineup. Let me go give up a first-round pick for that guy. All while, keep this in mind, guys, they had Don Majkowski as their starting quarterback, what most would consider probably a top 15, maybe a top 10 quarterback at the time. A guy that they called Magic Man, right? He could make things happen with his feet. And could just a superstar in the making, the way they described him before he got hurt. Think of the stones it took for Ron Wolf to go out and trade a first-round pick for a quarterback who was basically being ran out of Atlanta anyway. And lo and behold, it ends up being Brett Favre. I just think that's really, really cool. He also signed the most sought-after free agent in Reggie White, bringing in a team leader and a defensive superstar. The signing in NFL free agency's first year also made Green Bay a more desirable destination for future potential free agents, including White's fellow defensive linemen Santana Dotson and Sean Jones. Specifically, White's arrival negated the perception of Green Bay as a city where African-American players did not feel welcome. You guys remember we talked about that in the early going and how Vince Lombardi started to tear down those discrimination walls back when, you know, in the 60s, when, man, it was a really, really bad time for the country, and the country was burning with the civil rights movement, and everybody was so divided. But with White and cast off Gilbert Brown, the gravedigger, right, Dotson and Jones formed the heart of the Packers defense during the team's championship run. Wolf is credited with remaking the Packers into a perennial winner and a championship contender. From 1968 to 1991, the Packers had only 4 winning seasons. Wow, that's amazing. I mean, from 1968 to 1991, I mean, you're talking about a quarter of a century. They only had 4 winning seasons. Over his 9-year term as GM, the Packers compiled a 92-52 record, good for a .639 winning percentage, second in the NFL over that span, only to the 49ers. The Packers won Super Bowl 31 against the New England Patriots, and then they returned to the Super Bowl in Super Bowl 32 to face the Denver Broncos, where they lost. They made the playoffs 6 straight times. Wolf announced he would retire as a Packers GM in February 2001. He stayed on through the April NFL draft and officially retired as the Packers GM in June 2001. Afterward, the Packers head coach at the time, Mike Sherman, assumed his duties as GM. And it talks about his son, Elliot Wolf, you know, obviously going on to Cleveland, and I believe he's in New England now. So that's pretty much the gist of it, but let's wrap it up with this. On October 22nd, 2014, Ron Wolf was selected as a finalist to be a member in the Pro Football Hall of Fame as a contributor. That's a designation for individuals who were neither a player nor a coach. And then on January 31st, 2015, Wolf was confirmed as a member of the 2015 Hall of Fame class. He was inducted on August 8th of that year. So, like I said, you know, it being a GM episode, I thought it would be really, really cool to kind of talk about Ron Wolf, a man that like we talked about Bob Harlan in a previous episode, you know, Bob Harlan being basically the president, the acting owner of the Packers, was the one who went out and hired Ron Wolf, and then that set off this string of events where Ron Wolf then hired Mike Holmgren. He went out and traded for Brett Favre. He signed Reggie White. All of that happened because of Bob Harlan knowing that Ron Wolf was the guy for the job, and all that stemmed from the success he had in Oakland and how they built that rough and tough team there for the Raiders starting in 1963. So Ron Wolf, one of the greatest GMs in the history of this great league, and I think you guys are going to be really, really surprised when we kind of look at the success that Brian Gutekunst has already had, and we actually compare the two a bit here in a minute. So before we do that, let's take a second to take a quick commercial break. Let's pay some bills, and we'll be right back.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/built for us.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, so the whole purpose of this episode, obviously we covered Ron Wolf. The purpose of this episode is to kind of get everybody a little bit of a history lesson around Brian Gutekunst. You know, we hear he's the general manager. We know he was a scout for the Packers. Let's just kind of talk about who this guy is and what molded him into the GM that he is. It says that Gutekunst was born on July 19, 1973 in Raleigh, North Carolina. His father, John Gutekunst, was the head coach of the Minnesota Golden Gophers football team. Gutekunst attended the University of Wisconsin, La Crosse. During his time there, he played defensive back on the football team before suffering a career-ending shoulder injury. Afterwards, he served as an assistant coach with the team, including during their 1995 Division III National Championship season. So I had no idea that he was on staff there for that championship run there in Division III. That's pretty cool. Now, as far as scouting, Gutekunst spent most of the 1998 NFL season with the Kansas City Chiefs as a scouting assistant. He then joined the Packers as a college scout for the East Coast of the United States. Gutekunst assumed his position as director of college scouting in 2012. He was promoted to director of player personnel in March 2016. And then in 2018, the Packers general manager Ted Thompson, who had recently diagnosed with a neurodegenerative disorder, assumed a reduced role and named Gutekunst to the position after interviewing other internal candidates. And you guys know that, you know, Mark Murphy having a lot of say in that hire for Brian Gutekunst. He talked about how he and Ted compared the scouting reports from previous years, and Brian Gutekunst hands down had the best scouting reports, meaning that his scouting reports, he had more hits than anyone else in the building as far as scouts and anyone else in the front office that was involved with scouting. And they said, this is the guy that we want to put in place to be the general manager, because we know how important scouting and drafting good players is in Green Bay, given the limited free agent market with, you know, let's be honest, Green Bay it's a football town. There's not a whole lot else up there. You've got big name free agents that for whatever reason, they like the limelight. They want the big New York lights. They want the LA lights, and you just don't have that in Green Bay. So you got to have a general manager that's geared to draft really, really well to make it happen, right, to make it go around. So let's talk about his record here, guys. I think this is going to be, you know, you're kind of surprising to some, I think. You know, he took over in 2018. That first year, they were 6-9-1, right? In 2019, obviously, I'm sure that both he and Mark Murphy got some of his say in it as well, but it was essentially Mark Murphy's decision to hire Matt LaFleur as head coach. So 6-9-1 his first season, they hire Matt LaFleur, boom, right out the gate, 13-3 season, right? They go to the playoffs. 2020, 13-3 again. 2021, 13-4. So I mention that because, In the 4 years that Brian Gutekunst has been general manager for the Green Bay Packers, his only general manager experience, his record is 45-19-1. Why do I mention that? We just talked about the great Ron Wolf, the Hall of Famer Ron Wolf, right? You know, Ron Wolf has one Super Bowl ring. I'm not trying to downplay that. Now, obviously, he played a big role in Oakland and the championship teams they put together there, but he won one ring in Green Bay. Ron Wolf's winning percentage, guys and gals, was .638. Brian Gutekunst, only 4 years in, I'll give you that. It's small sample size. But 4 years in, his winning percentage as a general manager is .703. You understand, guys. That's 60 however many points higher than Hall of Famer Ron Wolf. I mean, we are very, very blessed to have Brian Gutekunst as general manager. I mean, that's pretty remarkable. I mean, you're talking about when it comes to as general manager, Ron Wolf, he GM'd 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. So, yeah, he actually was not in the general manager role in Oakland. He did a lot to help scout and draft those players. But, again, in Green Bay, he was there for 9 seasons. And Gutekunst has already been in Green Bay for 4. Ron Wolf's winning percentage, .638. Brian Gutekunst, .703. What's the only difference? You could say, okay, Brian Gutekunst has a higher winning percentage, but Ron Wolf has that ring. We get Gutekunst a ring, and I'm telling you, he's got a chance to go down as one of the greatest GMs in the history of the league. And I'm not saying after 4 or 5 years. I'm just saying, let's say he lasts 10, 15 years in the league, and he's got a ring or two, and that winning percentage stays high like that. This dude's liable to be a Hall of Famer. That's pretty cool. So let's talk about his draft class, right? That's the lifeblood of these Green Bay Packer teams. His very first draft, the very first pick he ever made, was the 18th pick overall in the 2018 NFL draft, and it was Jaire Alexander. I mean, you're talking about a guy that's arguably the best cornerback. I believe he is the best corner in the entire league. I think that no one would argue with you that he's a top three, right? So in that very first draft, he hit on Jaire Alexander, which is really, really cool. Other notable draft picks for that year would be Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Obviously, no superstar by no means, but to take him in the 5th round and have him contribute the way he did, I think that was a solid pick as well. As you guys see, Kansas City offered him a fairly large contract this year. He walked in free agency. So the two hits in that draft, definitely Jaire Alexander and MVS. Move on to 2019. The very first pick in the 2019 draft that he made was the 12th pick overall, Rashawn Gary. As you guys know, Rashawn Gary, they picked up the 5th-year option. He's a superstar in the making. I've seen all kinds of graphics roll through, right, that's showing Rashawn Gary as a top-5 pass rusher. In some cases, a top-3 pass rusher. Solid pick there. The very next pick, with the 21st pick overall, Darnell Savage Jr. You know, Darnell Savage Jr. came out the gate playing really, really strong. As you guys know, he had an off year last year. I thought that J.J. Leahy and Sam Holman did an excellent job on J.J. Leahy's show, Cheese and Packers. You guys need to make sure you're subscribed to whatever you need to subscribe to get notifications, whether it's on Twitter and you want to follow them or whatever. When you get a notification that there's a new Cheese and Packers episode, make sure you check it out. But they talked about Darnell Savage Jr. and how he's got a lot of criticism last year. But, you know, before that, the guy was a solid player. I hope he turns it around this year. I still think that's a hit. I mean, the fact that he has basically started since he's been in the league, and that was a first-round pick, that says a lot about that. His next pick in that draft, Elgton Jenkins. I mean, Elgton Jenkins is probably a top-5 left tackle when he's having to being forced to play that position. He's definitely a top-3, maybe the best guard in the entire league when he's healthy. And we're all praying over that knee. We want Elgton to be healthy this year, right? But that was another pick that he made during that draft. You know, we talked a little bit about Kingsley Keke, me and Jacob did, and how effective Kingsley Keke was there. I mean, he wasn't a horrible player. That guy was taken in the 5th round. That was a nice little find there. So of that draft there in 2019, he hit on Rashawn Gary, Darnell Savage, and Elgton Jenkins. Those are 3 big picks, guys. You've got to hit on those first and second round picks, and Goody nailed it in 2019. Let's go into 2020. 2020 draft, obviously the most controversial pick since Aaron Rodgers was taken right back in whenever it was, 2004, 2005, whatever the draft year was. You know, this was the year that Goody took Jordan Love with the 26th pick. The jury's still out. I still think Jordan Love can be a great player. Only time will tell, right? Obviously, things are a lot different when you have a full off season and you're actually training as the starter and being able to play and work with the ones. I think it's a whole different ball game. So for some people who just say he's a bust already, I don't know, maybe they're fortune readers. They're like Miss Cleo out there. They can tell that he's going to be a bad player. I don't understand how anybody's making that assumption based off of the small sample size we had. But Jordan Love was the first pick there. The jury's still out. A.J. Dillon in the second round, guys, that's a stud pick. You're talking about a guy who's a top five running back in the entire NFL. Got him in the second round. And he's somebody who's just built to run the ball at Lambeau Field. Just that big body, pounded at him in the cold. Guys don't want to tackle when there's snow flying and it's 20 degrees at Lambeau, right? A.J. Dillon is a back of the future. I really, really like A.J. Dillon. So that was a solid pick. Josiah DeGuara, I think that's been a little bit of a letdown, but we'll see what he does this year. I think he's going to have opportunity with Bob Tonyan being down. He's got a chance to come in and win the number one tight end spot. Now's the time for him to step up. We'll see what he's got this year. I really believe that. Another pick here in this draft was John Runyon. John Runyon has been a solid pass blocker. His run blocking, not that good, right? But the way that he was able to fill in last year, and for him to be a six-round pick, I think that's a solid pick there. And then Jonathan Garvin showed a few flashes. He was a seventh-round pick. We'll see what he does this year. I think he'll have opportunities being able to spell Rashawn Gary and Preston Smith there coming off the edge. And really, it's going to be a good competition between Jonathan Garvin and Agbar, right? The rookie pass rusher there, I believe out of South Carolina, I think was the college he was drafted out. So that draft there, I would say the hits were A.J. Dillon, John Runyon, and possibly Jonathan Garvin. For him being so late, there was great value there. So again, another solid draft class there. All right, moving on to 2021. Eric Stokes was the very first draft pick. I think we would all agree Eric Stokes was a good, solid pick. You know, I broke it down on PFF grades and talked about all the corners taken in that draft. Stokes, hands down, in my opinion, was argued. I mean, I think he was, based off of the small sample size, and a listener, really, really appreciate him reaching out, pointed out that one of, I think it was Sertan that might have been the guy, one of the first-round corners that were drafted that year actually battled injury, so it was a very small sample size. But still, Eric Stokes outperformed everyone who was taken in the first round that year at the cornerback position. So that seems to be a hit. I'm expecting him to take a huge step this year. With the second-round pick, you had Josh Myers. Josh Myers started at center last year, guys. I mean, yeah, injuries caught up with him, and you got to, you got to, you can't make the club in the tub is what they say, right? The most important ability is availability. If you're not healthy, then it doesn't matter how much talent you got. That talent does nothing when it's sitting on the bench. But the fact that he started when he was healthy said a lot about Josh Myers. PFF grade was low. It was in the 50s. I'm looking for that. I want to see that jump up into the 60s this year and him stay healthy. Then I think we might have a decent pick there in the second round. But the fact that he's starting really, really says a lot. Third rounder, Amari Rodgers, the jury's still out. Obviously, everybody's really, really down on him. Such a small sample size last year, guys. I mean, you're talking about he didn't have hardly any attempts at all as far as, passes thrown his way. It was, I don't want to botch the numbers, but it was something that was very, very low as far as opportunity. In the fourth round, Royce Newman. Royce Newman started at right guard. You've got two offensive linemen in that one draft that ended up starting on this offensive line. And, oh, by the way, the quarterback just went on to win MVP. It can't be a horrible offensive line if your quarterback wins MVP. I'm sorry. Your running game was on fire at times last year. You know, I mean, you're talking about A.J. Dillon has, I think his PFF grade was in the 80s last year. You don't do that without having a good offensive line. You're talking about two guys drafted in the second and in the fourth round that started on the offensive line. This has proven to be a pretty solid draft class as well. You got T.J. Slayton in the fifth round. That's a guy that's a big body, can play nose. I think the jury's still out there. And then Kylin Hill in the seventh round. I'm really excited to see Kylin Hill this year. I think that He's going to play a major role on special teams once he's healthy, if that knee is fully healthy, right? And I think he'll be a great change of pace back. I think A.J. Dillon said it best. He's like a young Aaron Jones. So that's the kind of scat back you're going to get, someone who can catch the ball coming out of the backfield as well. So I wanted to outline that stuff because that's kind of what I grade GMs on. You know, free agency, like I very shortly mentioned it earlier in the show here. Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, Adrian Amos knocked every one of those out of the park. Oh, by the way, Devondre Campbell, where did he come from? That's right. Brian Gutekunst found him. That's another huge free agency signing. Here's one, Rasul Douglas. You know, no one else was interested in Rasul Douglas. Goody seen something in him and made that signing. Guys, think about those free agents I just mentioned. Of those, what is it, four or five free agents I just mentioned, Preston Smith is still starting on defense. Devondre Campbell is starting linebacker. He was the second highest graded inside linebacker in the entire NFL last year, according to PFF. Rasul Douglas, starting corner, whether we're in the nickel, you know, the majority of the time or what. Solid corner there. Adrian Amos. I think Adrian Amos is one of the most underrated players in the entire league. I think that guy is a top three, at least a top five, maybe a top three safety for what he does, coming down the box and thumping a little bit, being great in coverage. Great team leader, voted team captain by his teammates, if I remember correctly. Goody has got an eye for talent, man. And I'm telling you, he's built this team the right way. And these draft classes, you know, you may be looking at it and go, yeah, but what about the other picks? Guys, that's the name of the game when it comes to draft classes. When it comes to the NFL draft, I mean, it's such a low success rate. When you start hitting on players like that consistently, like this last one here, the most recent one, 2021 draft, Eric Stokes, Josh Myers, Royce Newman, T.J. Slayton. I think T.J. Slayton's going to start at nose for the most part this year so they can move Kenny Clark around. Let's remove T.J. Slayton. In one draft class, they drafted three starters, guys, on rookie contracts. That's how you're able to maneuver the cap around the way that Brian Gutekunst has, kind of mimicking what the L.A. Rams are doing and the Saints and other teams getting creative with voidable years and all these things because they're hitting on draft picks. And that's exactly what the professionals, the talking heads, are talking about is if you're going to approach kicking the can down the road the way the Packers are, you've got to hit on those picks and, more importantly, those late-round picks. And that's exactly what Brian Gutekunst is doing. So with that being said, like I said, it's going to be a short show. I just thought, why not take this episode here? Let's have a GM episode. Let's talk about Brian Gutekunst. Let's take a walk down memory lane and talk about Ron Wolf and how important he was to the Packers organization. And again, the stat that really stands out to me, guys, I know it's right now he's coming up this year. He will surpass half the amount of time that Ron Wolf was a general manager. Okay, so now we're getting in that ballpark where, okay, he's going to start, you know, accruing those years to kind of catch up with Ron Wolf, so it'd be a good even sample size. And Ron Wolf, winning percentage, 638. Brian Gutekunst, 703. Guys, I think we truly, truly have the Wolf of 1265 Lombardi out there with Brian Gutekunst. I think he's done an excellent job, and I'm really excited about the future. The way he handled this Aaron Rodgers situation, the thing I love about Brian Gutekunst is there doesn't seem to be any ego. You know, let me stay on Aaron for a minute. Aaron Rodgers came out and said he was furious at the organization, right? He basically put them all on blast. Ego, an egotistical general manager would have been said, okay, well, I'm the general manager. As a matter of fact, Ron Wolf went on the radio on an interview. I heard it, and he said, you know, these players today, they think they need to be GM and play. Why don't you shut up and play? Like, Ron Wolf was pretty bold in his stance of a player shouldn't have any say. And that's how most general managers would have approached that. They probably would have been like, you know, I'm the general manager. You'll play or I'll trade you, right? And Aaron, if he had approached it like that, Aaron would have been like, okay, fine, trade me. And now we're without back-to-back MVP quarterback. But what did Brian Gutekunst do? He put his ego to the side and said, all right, let me sit down and talk to this guy. And they got on the same page, and cooler heads prevailed. Guys, that's the sign of a mature, professional NFL executive. That's a guy who knew exactly what he needed to do that was best for the organization, and to be able to lock Rodgers up for multiple years if indeed he decides not to retire this year and continues to play. They are set at the most important position in all of football. You know, one of the arts of dealing with people and making a big business deal, and I was taught this a long time ago by a couple of business owners in Knoxville, Tennessee, and it's not manipulative. It's just business 101. The art to a good deal, the way that you know you've landed a good deal is when you get what you want out of the deal while convincing the other party they got what they wanted to. Not lying to them, but helping them understand, hey, look, this is a good deal for you too, right? I feel like that's what Brian Gutekunst did with Aaron Rodgers. They sat down, cooler heads prevailed, and look at how they drafted that Jordan, you know, the Jordan Love pick really stands out to me because before they drafted Jordan Love, Aaron was kind of lulled to sleep, right? He was just kind of, you know, still a great quarterback. The second they drafted Jordan Love, what happened? Aaron Rodgers stepped his game up. I think it was brilliant. Now, I don't think they said, hey, look, guys, this quarterback sucks, but we're going to draft him because it's going to piss Aaron off. I don't think they did that at all. Please don't get me wrong, right? But I think that they knew, you know, what's the byproduct of it. It might make him a little mad, but it might also light a fire under him. So I hope Jordan Love works out. I really do. I think, like I said, I think he's got a lot of tools in the bag, and I'm really excited about seeing him play more. And this preseason, guys, I ain't kidding. I am really excited to watch preseason this year. I hope Jordan Love gets a lot of playing time this preseason, and I would love to see him come out and show some of the flashes that Aaron did at times when he was given an opportunity. But don't forget, Aaron in no way was this superstar sitting on the bench that everybody knew he was going to be great. I remember them drafting Brian Brohm. You guys have heard me talk about it. They drafted a quarterback in the second round the year before Aaron took over. Why did they do that? Probably because they didn't know if Aaron was the guy. You don't know until they're put into that role and they get all the QB1 reps in practice and they get all the game plan put around their tools in the bag. And then you get a chance to see them lead in the huddle and how they respond to adversity in game. That's when you know what you got. So we really got to pump our brakes on Jordan Love. So with that being said, I'm going to wrap the show up right there, guys. I thought this would be a great episode, a great opportunity to just talk about the general manager, to talk about Ron Wolf, to talk about Brian Gutekunst, kind of show that we do have something that we need to appreciate in Brian Gutekunst. He's a guy that's very, very level-headed, and I think he's the right guy for the job in Green Bay just because of his scouting skills, his eye for talent, and his ability to draft and maneuver in the draft. That's another thing he does well, is just climbing up and down the board to make sure you put yourself in a position to get the players that you need to get. I think that's it's a testament to his people skills because you don't make those trades with nobody. Those trades, the foundation for those trades are being put in place a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks before the draft where they start to go, okay, the way the board looks like it's going to fall, we would be interested in trading with you for this pick. What would you give us? It's not just, tell me your best offer. You know, dealing with people, it's not that brash. And football is no different. Anybody who does business dealing like that, they're going to be broke really, really soon. They're going to find themselves in the soup line. It's that simple. So, really excited about to see what the Packers do this year with Brian Gutekunst going into year 5. Man, I'm telling you, if they come out and have the season that we think they're going to have, that winning percentage is just going to continue to go up. And I'm telling you, he's putting himself in rare air when you talk about that winning percentage. So coming into year 5, it's no longer a small sample size. I'm excited to see what he does. So with that being said, guys, don't forget about the giveaway. I'm not going to bore you with the details again. Just go to my Twitter, look at the pinned tweet. All the information will be there. You heard me. If you didn't tune in on the first half of this podcast, rewind right back to the beginning. And I said rewind like it's a VHS tape or something. My God, I'm dating myself. This is horrible. I'm getting old, guys. It's rough. It's rough. But go back to the front of the podcast, and there'll be instructions on how to enter that contest to win the indoor club seat. Come up there, sit in the box with us, have a cold beer, eat some cheese curds, and watch the Packer football against the Rams in December. So With that being said, we're going to wrap the show up, guys. Appreciate you all taking the time to listen. You could be anywhere in the world listening to anything that you know you have your access to, but for whatever reason you choose to hang out with us and this goofy show, and we don't take it lightly. So as always, let's go out and be the change we want to see in the world, and go Pack, go.
Thank God never farted.